Hi, podcast listeners. This is another chapter in the ongoing serialization of Fates vs. Death Sunrise Hotel, a full-length novel that takes place in the Fates vs. Death universe. We'll be doing one chapter every other week, free on the podcast, or if you want to listen to or read the whole thing now, you can go to www.fatesvsdeath.com and buy the complete novel. When you buy the paper version of the novel, you'll get access to the complete audiobook that you can download in MP3 format. Fates vs. Death Sunrise Hotel contains some pretty heavy subject matter, including some sexual violence, so these podcasts are intended for mature listeners only. Fates vs. Death Sunrise Hotel, a novel by Brian St. Clair Kane. This story takes place in the world of Fates vs. Death, the role-playing game. The day before, Tina slept in until about noon. When she woke up, she was jittery, prone to startle, and her stomach was cramping. Tabitha was still out. Manny and Joe were awake and soon went out to try to scrounge up some lunch. Tina didn't say anything to Manny and Joe about what had happened last night. Eventually, Maricel opened her eyes but didn't get up or say anything. Tina sat on the floor near the couch. They were quiet for a while, until Tina spoke. "I'm in trouble." "That was pretty fucked up last night," Maricel said, her voice sounding hoarse. "Can you get me some water?" Tina quickly scrounged up an old fast food cup from the junk in the room, then went and filled it up in the sink of the communal bathroom. She returned and Maricel drank it.
"How do you do it?" Tina asked.
"Keep your head."
"I don't smoke as much as you. You and Manny and Joe had already been smoking when I got home."
"Yeah, but you always keep your head. You always make sure we don't blow our rent money. You never lose your cool."
Maricel shrugged slightly.
"I don't know. Someone has to keep their head. If I wasn't here to do it, someone else would."
"We'd be fucked if it weren't for you," Tina said in a small voice. "I'd be dead if it weren't for you."
Another long pause. Tina said, "I'm so sorry." Maricel coughed.
"You already apologized to me. Save your apologies for Tabitha."
"You think she's all right?"
"Yeah, she probably just wanted to stay with one of her boyfriends. Smart thing to do, seeing as how psycho you were getting."
Manny and Joe came back with a plastic bag full of dinner rolls. The four of them ate. Maricel got up to take a shower, and Tina retrieved her knives from under the couch. She carefully rewrapped the poison blades and put the knives back in their places. Tina told Manny and Joe about the mattress, and asked if they would go to the Upper East Side with her and help her carry it back. They said that they wanted to try to get a hold of their gentleman friend and see if he wanted to hang out with them. They said if they weren't too busy, they would come back and they could go get the mattress. Tina put on her leather boots with the knife blades and laced them up tightly. She left the hotel and started walking down Christie. The sun was high enough in the sky to peer down between the buildings. She walked in the middle of the street, sidestepping potholes so she could stand in the sun. There was the burnout shell of a car sitting in the middle of the street that hadn't been there the last time she'd walked this street. A lot of the signs in this part of town were vinyl banners with faded Asian characters in red on a white background. The pleasant smell of bread baking hit her from somewhere nearby. After a few blocks, she came to a burned-out shell of a building. She pushed aside the plywood behind the open doorway and ducked inside. She checked around the place to make sure she was alone. The place was mostly concrete floor, soot-blackened bricks, and heavily graffitied plywood over windows and doors. Nothing remained of the second floor but a few pipes and blackened beams. Part of the wall near the ceiling had collapsed and light streamed in, providing her only light. The place smelled like day-old campfire and piss. Towards the rear of the building, covering the rear doorway, was a large piece of plywood. Tina had scrawled the outline of a human body on it, and the outline was dotted with dozens of stab marks, mostly going straight through the plywood, light peeking in from the other side. Tina started with some backhanded slashes at the face and neck of the outline. Then she deftly flipped the knives around and went for some low lunges, quickly piercing the stomach of the outline and then pulling away. She did a few throws, but she had broken off the tip of one of her favorite knives doing a throw, and had since limited her throwing practice. Tina did a few combos, a high slash with one knife, then a low stab with the other. Next she practiced with her boot blades. Mostly she concentrated on the knees and crotch. She got bored with that eventually and started practicing high kicks. Practically speaking, the high kicks weren't good for much. In a real fight, she wouldn't kick any higher than the hips, but they sure did look cool. Tina had warmed up enough to take off her jacket, despite it being cold enough that she could see her breath. Tina did successively higher kicks, stomach, chest. Tina could kick almost to the neck height, but it wasn't easy. Tina did most of her kicks with her right foot, though she would occasionally try one with her left.
Then Tina was attempting an especially high kick, one which would hit the neck of someone the same size as her. The blade stuck in the plywood, but when she tried to pull it out, it didn't budge. This was not an uncommon occurrence. Tina gave her foot a jerk, but the blade still wouldn't budge. The tendons on her leg were starting to burn, and the muscles were starting to tremble. She grabbed her thigh and leaned backwards. The blade did not budge. She tried to reach for the laces of her boots, but her arms weren't long enough. The muscles in her thigh started to cramp, and she let out a pain. Fuck! Fuck! She grabbed onto her thigh and started yanking. Each yank caused pain in her ankle, but it was not nearly as bad as the pain of her cramping thigh. Then Tina saw movement out of the corner of her eye. She twisted her head and saw figures entering the dimly lit space. There were four adults, three men and one woman. They were naked, skinny as anyone had ever seen, covered in dirt, grime, sores, scabs, and scars. She could smell them from across the room. They smelled worse than even the homeless winos who pissed themselves. Their posture was poor, their shoulders hunched, necks craned, arms drawn back near their chests. Their wide eyes, open mouths, and slack facial features told Tina there was no human intelligence there. They were maulers, people who had used a drug that slowly ate away their human intelligence. Even after they had forgotten how to talk, they remembered how to steal things and trade them for drugs. When that ability went, they became nothing more than a pack of unusually large and unusually clever stray dogs. Tina had heard about maulers from several different people, but had always thought that it might just be an urban legend. Yet these things were undeniably maulers, and they were looking right at her. All the stories had also said that maulers were cannibals, that if they found a person who was sick or drunk or otherwise incapacitated, they would tear the person apart and eat them alive. The fear made Tina forget the pain in her leg, made her whole body feel numb, like when you're going to sleep and you can't recall what position your arm is until you move it. The first thing Tina did was pull a knife out of her pocket with trembling hands. Did maulers know what a knife was? She didn't know. Would maulers realize that her leg was stuck and she was helpless? She didn't know. Okay, she thought to herself, they're like dogs. What would I do if a pack of wild dogs came in here? Tina summoned her angriest face, and in the deepest, loudest voice she could muster, she screamed, get the fuck out of here! Startled, the maulers jumped back. They watched her, waiting to see what she would do next. I'll fucking kill you! She screamed. This second threat didn't seem to faze them. The sudden numbness that fear had given her was wearing off quickly, and she could feel the pain in her thigh again. It felt like some giant had grabbed her thigh and was wringing it like a washcloth. Tina grabbed her thigh with the hand not holding the knife and yanked, but there was no result. She was up on her toes and became aware that the ankle she was standing on was starting to tremble. The maulers were inching closer again, watching carefully. Tina bared her teeth, growled, and slashed out with her knife. The maulers paused, but did not move back. Then Tina couldn't take the pain anymore, and she let her legs go slack. There was a burst of terrible pain in her ankle, and she found herself lying in a heap on the floor, her glasses off-kilter on her face. She was slightly disoriented, and she swung her head around, looking for maulers. When she saw them, they were coming towards her. Fuck you! She screamed, and scrambled to her knees. She realized with panic that she had dropped her knife. Her eyes were watering from pain, and everything was blurry. She found the shape of the knife and grabbed it up. She slashed it in the air. The maulers were there, watching her, not moving, almost within arm's reach. They could be on her within the blink of an eye. She screamed, slashing at them again and again. With the third slash, she pushed herself onto her feet. The pain in her ankle was nearly blinding, but it held her weight. She shuffled forward a step, still screaming and slashing, and they backed off a bit. She stepped to the side, limping so badly it was only slightly better than hopping on one foot. She moved around the group, never turning away from them, never pausing her screaming and slashing. She moved to the door and backed out onto the sidewalk. She limped backwards down the street, allowing a small cry of pain each time she stepped on her right foot. The maulers never came out of the building after her. After she was a few blocks away, she sat down in a little trash alcove, a half dozen steps below street level, with her back to the building. She wept with pain. She inspected her boot. The blade was twisted slightly and seemed a little loose, but was otherwise okay. Her ankle felt swollen and hot, and she wondered if it was broken. When she got so bored she couldn't stand it anymore, she forced herself to her feet. She limped painfully back to the hotel. As Tina limped slowly up the stairs, the three thuggish-looking men she'd seen the other day were swaggering their way down. The short one with the light brown skin and the shaved head with spikes in the skin was in front. Behind him was the one with the huge bulge in the crotch of his jeans. The tall one with bad posture and bad skin and a Freedom Army flag on his cap was last. One of them, she wasn't sure who, was wearing too much cologne. The width of the stairwell forced Tina to pass within inches of the men. As they passed, they eyed her in a vaguely predatory fashion. Despite the fact she found them intimidating, Tina resisted the urge to look down or away, keeping eye contact until they had passed. Nobody else was in the room, and Tina collapsed on the couch. She thought someone had a paperback book in the room, and she leaned over it and rooted through the pile of clothing and food wrappers. She couldn't find it, though. Manny and Joe came back eventually. They'd been unable to find their John. Tina told them about spraining her ankle and begged them to go get the mattress for her. They didn't look happy, but they listened to her description of where she had hidden it. They left to go get it, and Tina was alone again. Manny and Joe came back in a few hours with the mattress, beaming and looking proud of themselves.
They explained that they had carried the mattress across 110th Street to Broadway, then they had waited for a freight train to come by. Somehow, they had managed to jump onto the sides of one of the trains, holding onto the ladders. They had kept a hold of the mattress and ridden the train all the way down to the Bowery. Manny and Joe switched out the mattresses, taking the old one out and tossing it on the sidewalk in front of the hotel. Then they lay down on the new mattress, rolling around to test it out. "Pretty good," grinned Joe. At first, Tina thought they were happy because she had found them a good mattress, but then she realized they were just proud about hopping the train. Manny and Joe got ready to leave.
"Wait," Tina said, "where are you going?"
"We're going to go wait in line for dinner at the Mission," Manny said.
"Can you bring me back some food?"
They looked at each other. Then Joe said, "Tina, you know they barely give you enough food for one person. You should come with us. You could lean on us."
"I can't. I'm in fucking agony whenever I try to walk, and I'm starving. I haven't had anything to eat today except the bread rolls you brought earlier. Here, I'll give you whatever money I have."
She fumbled for the nickels and dimes in her pocket. She held out the change, and Manny took it. "All right," Joe said. "We'll see if we can get you a little food, but you should try to get over to Broadway, do some begging so you can contribute something."
"And how the hell am I supposed to get over there?" Tina asked angrily. "It's like 5 blocks further to Broadway than it is to the Mission."
"She should get the bear to give her a ride," Manny said to Joe, talking about a large homeless crazy that often hung around on the same block as the hotel.
Joe laughed. "I'm sure he'd jump at a chance to have Tina ride him." Tina thought they were making fun of her, and she wanted to tell them off, but she was afraid they wouldn't bring her food if she did. She kept her mouth shut, and they left. She managed to take a nap while they were gone. They came back with Maricel, and each of them had a little bit of food in their pockets for her. Some chicken nuggets, a half a potato, and part of a chocolate bar that had started to turn light brown with age. She thanked them and eagerly ate the food. Maricel asked if Tabitha had been back at all, and Tina said she hadn't seen her. Maricel talked about her day. She had met an old guy who took her back to his apartment, gave her some old clothes, fixed her up a sandwich, and they gave her $5.
"And he didn't want anything?" Manny asked.
Maricel explained that the old guy was just trying to be nice, to help her out. She said he had worked for a carnival when he was younger, as a ride operator. He talked about what it was like to travel around the country on the carnival circuit, to live in a cheap little hotel during the off-season. He was a soldier for the Freedom Army during the Freedom Wars, but he had defected and lived in a farmhouse until the end of the war. Tina was awed by the passion in Maricel's voice as Maricel talked about the old guy's past. Maricel really found people interesting. To Tina, most people seemed like a threat. Tina knew that Maricel had an ability to get close to people, to find out about them. Tina wished she could get close to people like Maricel did. It was easy to get close to guys, but they all turned out to be creeps. She tried getting close to girls, but none of them felt the same way about her as she did about them. She had acquaintances outside the hotel, people she could spend time with and share experiences with, but only when she ran into them at random. If she disappeared, none of them would notice. The closest people in her life were the people she shared the room with, but they were probably all scared of her after last night. Tina wiped her eyes with the side of her hand, hiding tears. Manny and Joe went to go try to hook up with their generous John again. Maricel said she was going to go to Broadway to try panhandling. Tina asked if she could go too, if Maricel would let her lean on her. Maricel agreed, and together they hobbled to Broadway. Tina planned on sitting on the separate sides of the street, so they could hit people walking on either sidewalk. When she got there, though, she didn't want to be alone, so she sat next to Maricel. Maricel didn't seem to mind. They sat together on the sidewalk, their backs to the featureless gray facade of the huge office building that rose up dozens of stories behind them. The office building's windows were all dark, its glass doors all boarded up with plywood. 3 large mortar holes were visible on the side of the building. They sat and talked, pausing mid-conversation to ask the people walking by for change. There was a cold wind, and they both put their knees to their chests. As Tina talked, she fingered the fresh, spiral-shaped wound on her arm and the slightly older injuries on her chest and face. The scab from the stab wound on her chest was still slightly pliable, not completely hard yet. They talked about nice things people had done for them. Now that Tina thought about it, there had been a significant number of times people had done nice things for her, with no indication they had an ulterior motive. Then they talked about crazy things people had done on Godkiller. They had a few anecdotes they had witnessed themselves, but mostly it was things that they had heard about third hand. Tina talked about wanting to dye her hair a different color, and Maricel gave her opinion on the different colors Tina had in mind. Tina explained that she wouldn't be able to do it for a while. She couldn't shoplift some hair dye until her ankle was good enough that she could run away from the security guards.
"Hell, I'll steal some hair dye for you,"
Maricel said with a smile, and she got up to go.
"No way," Tina said, laughing. "Not now."
"Why not now? I'll be back in a minute." About 20 minutes later, Maricel came back grinning and tossed Tina a box of green hair dye. She also had a big bag of sunflower seeds that she shared with Tina.
"You're the best," Tina said.
After munching on sunflower seeds and commenting on the hairstyles of people passing by, Tina asked Maricel a question.
"You ever feel like you want something really badly, but you don't know what it is you want?"
"I guess so. I guess I feel like something's missing from my life. Sometimes I want my life to change, so badly that it hurts, but I don't know what I want it to change into.
Tina said, staring up Broadway. Huge buildings stretched up into the darkness. The upper floors were abandoned and dark and made black silhouettes against the gray sky. I guess being like you would be a good start. Marcel laughed. Shut up! You gotta be fucking kidding me. My life sucks. Most of the time I'm hungry, strung out, poor. Sometimes I get so desperate for cash I let guys fuck me. She looked at the people walking up and down Broadway. There were teen gang members in flashy clothing with prominently displayed weapons, homeless people carrying bulging bags, workers in uniform on their way to late shifts at factories and fast food restaurants. I'd trade my life with 2/3 of the people out here, Marcel said, any day of the week. Tina felt foolish for saying what she had said. She wasn't sure if he even really meant it. She just wanted to get on Marcel's good side, and now Marcel thought she was stupid. At least people like you, Tina said grumpily. You have no idea how many people like you, Marcel said. Where's that cute chick with the glasses? That's all I get. They sat there for a while longer. Tina thought about asking Marcel why she'd run away from home. Tina knew why her other roommates had run away. Tabitha, who had complained about her parents so much she felt like she could write a book about them, had run away because her parents had treated Tabitha like dirt, and Tabitha finally couldn't stand it and took off. Manny had been kicked out when he told his parents he was a transsexual. Joe had left home rather than tell his parents he was gay. People always talked like discrimination against homosexuals was a thing of the past, some historical evil that had been wiped out, like sexism or slavery. Yet if that was the case, Tina often wondered, why are so many of her fellow runaways gay or transsexual? Not every gay or transsexual person had a hard time at home and ran away, but many more did than she'd imagined before coming to the city. Tina had heard Marcel say that her father was evil, but nothing more. Tina didn't know what Marcel's dad had done, and if it was what made Marcel run away, or if there had been a mom. Tina remembered earlier when she'd been jealous of Marcel's ability to connect with people. If Marcel was in Tina's place and what she wanted to know, she would just ask, "So what's up with your parents?" Tina decided that that was what she should do, just ask. Yet she couldn't make herself do it. They felt close right now, and Tina didn't want to do or say anything that might wreck that. Manny and Joe came along with a big bucket of fried chicken. They hadn't found their John, but they had gone to a bar and started talking with a guy. The guy said he was going to go meet his boyfriend, who was getting off his shift at a fast food place. They went with him and got a whole bucket of fried chicken from the boyfriend. Joe licked barbecue sauce off the fingers of one hand. You know what would go great with this? Brandy.
Fried chicken and brandy? That's awful southern of you, Marcel said, doing a fake southern accent. Well, you know I am a southern boy, Joe said, also doing an accent.
Tina and Marcel had made a couple of bucks panhandling. They all pooled their money and got a big $7 plastic jug of brandy from the liquor store. They went back to the room, Tina supported by Marcel on one side and Joe on the other. They drank and told stupid stories. Tina went and used the hair dye, dyeing the hair on the top of her head green, leaving the stubble on the sides purple. Tabitha came home, by herself. She was frowning and looked tired. Her head slumped forward slightly, so her eyes were on the carpet a few feet in front of her.
Tabitha? Tina said. I'm so sorry about the other night. That was totally fucked up.
Yeah, whatever, Tabitha said, in a voice that hid any emotion. She sat down on the bed, and they passed the jug of brandy and the chicken bucket over to her. Soon she passed out on the bed. The rest of them stayed up a few hours more before they fell asleep.